continue the topic of Anas Tvarim because it's this week's parsha, and what we're going to do today about Anas Tvarim is we're going to talk about the halachas of those people that require extra sensitivity, even though we have to be sensitive to all people, and then we'll go through some examples that Chazal give us of Anas Tvarim. So let's start with people that require extra sensitivity. The Sefer HaChinuch Mitzvah Samachay tells us that you have to be even more compassionate and kind toward those people who are most weak and most vulnerable, because you have to realize that they're obviously going to be most sensitive. And to that end, the Gemara Maseches BaMetziah Daf Nun Ches, going over to Daf Nun Tes, tells us that a person has to be very careful in the way that one speaks to one's wife. And the Gemara gives two reasons that one has to be extra careful with the sensitivity with which he speaks to his wife. First of all, dim asan matsuya, that women tend to cry more easily than men, meaning they are more sensitive than men. They tend to be more sensitive than men. And also, the Gemara says, because you owe everything to her, that one's blessing that they have, all the brachas you have in your house, is a result of beso zuishto, is a result of the zchus of one's wife. So a simple sense of hakaras hatov would demand that you treat her with a certain amount of reverence because and appreciation, because everything that you have in your life is a result of her. The Gemara Maseches Ksuvos Nev Samach Beis tells the story of an Amora who died an untimely death because his wife cried, and it was his fault that she had cried, meaning one has to be extremely sensitive to the wife. What would be nafkamina between the two reasons? So nafkamina might be, is this a din about women in general or only about one's wife? Meaning if it's because dim asan matsuya, so then maybe that's about all women. But if it's about the fact that you have to have an appreciation for the fact that everything that you have in your life is a result of her, so then that's only true of one's wife, would not be true of other women. The Maharal points out that insensitivity and mistreatment of a wife is much worse than insensitivity toward other people, because women tend to rely on their husbands as their defenders, meaning to give them comfort in times that are difficult. It's interesting, the Amora that teaches us in Bava Metzia about how sensitive one must be to their wife is Rav. And what do we know about Rav's relationship with his own wife? The Gemara in Ksubis, Daf Samach Beis Amud Beis, said that Rav's wife was not particularly nice to him. She was not very kind to him. She was a difficult woman to deal with. So perhaps Rav is telling us that even if you have reason to reciprocate poor behavior to your wife, you can't. You shouldn't, because you still have to have an appreciation that everything that you have is from her. And that's unlike other relationships. The Sma and Choshe Mishpah and Simin Reish Chav Chesiv Katan Dalid says that normally you're allowed to respond in kind, Kamayim Panim El Panim, the way a person treats you. But Rav is perhaps teaching us not with one's wife. So category number one of people that require extra sensitivity is your wife. Category number two, the Rambam in Hilchos Deos Parak Vav Halacha Ches tells us that there's a particularly high level of sensitivity that needs to be expressed when speaking to children. Certainly children cry more easily than adults. And the story is told of many different Gedolei Yisrael who saw children being yelled at and were just very hurt by it, because they realized that for an adult to get yelled at, it's much easier to brush it off. When a child gets yelled at, when a child is spoken to harshly, it really has a very tremendous impact on the child. Rav Pam's grandson told me he was once with his grandfather and they saw a woman yelling at her kid and telling the kid, "You're a bad boy. You're a bad boy." And Rav Pam started to cry. And he said, "How could she say such a thing to a child, that he's a bad boy? She has to discipline him, she has to reprimand him, but to call him a bad boy, she's defining him as a bad boy? Now, you can't do that to a child." A third category, the Torah tells us in Shmos Parach HaBeis Pasach HaValef, that a person has to be very careful in the way that they treat a yasam or an almana. There's a machlokas in the Medrash. Does that mean that is the pasuk really talking about all people? It just gives the most common examples of people who are hurt, a yasam and almana, or is it specifically a separate isser about a yasam and almana? But clearly the assumption is that they are the most vulnerable people. How do you define a yasam? How do you define an almana? Not so simple. A friend of mine was on a board for a tzedakah that makes weddings for yasomim. So a man who was in his 40s applied for a grant from the organization to help pay for his wedding. A man in his 40s, because he said, my parents are no longer with us, so I'm a yasom. So do I get, but come on, like, you know, he could be a surgeon making, you know, $2 million a year. And, you know, like at what point do you say that a person is not a yasom, right? We would all consider a 5-year-old child who lost his parents to be a yasom. We would probably all consider an 80-year-old person who lost his parents to not be a yasom. So how do you define in terms of this halacha? So the Kaf Chaim, or Chaim, some Kufn and Vav, some Kutn Yedalid, suggests that it depends on each person, but the gather is anybody who still requires an adult presence to guide them and help them get through their day-to-day living is still considered a yasam. Kaf Chaim writes, by the time someone's 20, they're for sure not a yasam. Ooh, so that's pretty chumr. Maybe people were built tougher back then. But you would have to define a yasam very carefully. Similarly, in Almana, the Kaf Chaim says, the Kaf Chaim doesn't talk about it, I don't think, but it's a worthwhile discussion. What if a woman remarries? Do you say that she's still an Almana? So it may depend why you have to be sensitive to an Almana. If it's because she doesn't have anyone to protect her, because a woman relies on her husband to protect her, well, now she does. She's remarried. But if it's not about having someone to protect her, it's about the difficulties that she's gone through in life, well, she still has gone through the loss of a husband, which is a terribly difficult thing for a person to go through. A fourth category of people that require extra sensitivity is a ger. The Torah says this. I would list the makaros, but I can't. There are 36 different places in the Torah where the Torah says that we have to be extra sensitive to a ger. The Chizkuni points out that gerim tend to make easy targets. They're not as familiar with a lot of minhagim and hanhagos that native Jews have, and they descend from people who come from very distant places to Judaism, in terms of not just talking about physical location, but in terms of where the types of ashkafos and types of lives that their ancestors lived. The Gemara B'Metzia Daf Nun Tes tells us that it's absurd for us to make fun of a ger as a result of his background, because we're all gerim. It would be like a person that's a balmum making fun of someone else who's a balmum. It's ridiculous to do such a thing. Minchas chinuch, a mitzvah, taf lamed aleph, is not sure exactly how you define a ger. What about the children of gerim? So he has a discussion of exactly how to define a ger. He says you really have to look at Ebenezer, Siman Zayin, where the Shulchan Aruch discusses that a little bit. Okay, so those are categories of people that we have to be extra sensitive to when it comes to anas devarim. What are some examples of anas devarim? I don't mean like I'm going to spend the next few minutes berating you and telling you what anas devarim, but just examples that are identified by Chazal as behaviors or kinds of statements that a person should avoid. So if you have to, you look through the Gemara in Babetzia, Daf Nun Ches, the Gemara gives several examples. So the most famous example is nicknames. We're not going to get into that one now. There already was a 10-minute halacha on nicknames. It happens to be a fascinating topic about what exactly is the kind of nickname that would be a violation and why it would be a violation of another svarim. Let's move on to the second category. The Gemara in Babetzia says that... gives examples of anas devarim, says telling a balchuva to recall how he used to be, or the child of gerim to recall how his forefathers used to behave, and saying how crazy it is that he's interested in learning Torah because a mouth that ate all sorts of disgusting non-kosher foods is now going to learn Torah Hashem. That's a violation of anas devarim. And the basic idea is that sometimes reminding people of the way that they or their ancestors lived their lives can be hurtful. The term bal tshuva is not limited to people who we colloquially refer to as balei tshuva, who grew up without Torah mitzvos. Sometimes it's a person who had 12 years of yeshiva education, but used to have challenges in certain areas of halacha, and to remind them, oh, he was such a ladies' man in high school, and now like, the guy's a yeshiva guy, and he's trying to be, you know, he's trying to like change who he is and change his reputation, and it's hurtful for him to have to relive, you know, some of the things that he did. The Iyun Yaakov and the commentary in the Iyun Yaakov points out reminding about tshuva is it's actually of his past sins could often often be a great compliment, because the Gemara in Brachos and Daf Lam Dalim and Beis and Sanhedrin Daf Tzadi Tes says us, and the Gemara in Yuma, that b'makom shabali tshuvam the main tzadikim gemurim yichal ma'amud. But you have to know the situation. Is this going to be a compliment for him? You know, sometimes you'll hear they'll introduce a speaker who's a ger or a bal tshuva, and they'll say, this person used to be, and why are they allowed to do that? Isn't that a nice form? No, that's the whole thing that you're saying. Like, look how far they've come. Look what they've made themselves into. So you have to know the context of that Gemara. It's also interesting, the Gemara discusses telling the bal tshuva himself of his own past deeds, and the child of a ger about his parents' past, but doesn't mention anything about reminding a ger of his own past, right? The Gemara doesn't give that example. So the Marshan, the Chidush HaGadol in Bamitzia, says that reminding a ger of the commitment that he has made to join the Jewish people can only be taken in a positive way. There's no negative way to understand that. Meaning, if you can talk about a bal tshuva, so you can say, oh, you used to be an avarian. Okay, so that could be understood as negative, as opposed to positive, saying, look how far you've come. You remind someone that, oh, you come from, your yichus is, that could be understood as negative. But that you used to be a goy, and you made the commitment to become a Jew, an observant Jew, that can only be a great compliment. A third example of anas tevarim, the Gemara tells us in Bamitzia, is to share opinions with the other person as to why they've suffered a terrible misfortune. The Gemara talks about the friends of Eov as having violated that form of anas tevarim because they speculated on why Eov was suffering, like what you must have done to deserve this. Well, of course, we believe in schar va'onesh, but we also believe that we don't always understand the ways of a Kadosh Baruch Hu in implementing schar va'onesh. One would have to be a Navi. The Gemara in Shabbos, Tavi Gimel, tells the story of the woman whose husband died, b'chatzi yamav, even though he was karahar, b'shanahar, b'shimash l'milchamar, and he still died at the age of 35, and the Gemara tells us that she went around to every Beis Medrash and Beis Knesses and started asking people, why did my husband die? And the Gemara says, lo haya adam machzi raso davar. No one said anything, because who do you think you are? You're going to respond. But it's a time to be Eliyahu. So Eliyahu Anavi says, till she told me. And when she told me, I asked her, Biti, b'yimei nidosecha ma'u etzlecha, b'yimei libunecha ma'u etzlecha. Eliyahu Anavi was able to, because he's a Navi. You have to be a Navi to do that. Otherwise, it's just blatant, simple anas devarim to speculate as to why it is that a person suffers. The Gemara in Brachos and Daf Hey tells us something that seems to contradict that example, because it tells us Rav Huna had a massive supply of wine that spoiled, and the Rabbanim came to visit him and suggested that he try to determine what avera he may have done that would have caused this loss. And they said, you had to have done an avera. Hashem would have just done this for no reason. And as it turns out, he discovered that it was his failure to pay wages to his sharecropper in a timely fashion, and that was responsible for this setback that he had. So apparently the Rabbanim had no hesitation about blaming Rav Huna's misfortune on an avera that he did, which seems to be a contradiction to this idea. But the Malbim writes that it's not a contradiction at all, because Tosfos and Brachos suggest that they only suggested Rav Huna's being punished for an avera that he had committed because they knew about that avera. They knew that he had done a particular avera, because many great people who had never sinned suffer from all sorts of life difficulties without any explanation. So the Malbim suggests the Gemara only considers speculation of a sin to be onas tevarim, but pointing out an avera and saying, look, you got to do tshuva for that avera that you do, that we all know that you do, that's something that maybe would not be onas tevarim. But again, that too, like tochacha, has to be done very, very carefully. A fourth example of onas tevarim, pretty famous example, the Gemara gives a person who goes to a store and pretends as if he's interested in buying something, but really has no interest whatsoever in buying something. What's so terrible about that? So the Meiri explains, because the storekeeper is going to say, oh, do you want to buy this? I wrap it up for you. And you might say something like, it's not really worth it. Something that negative about the item, just because you were never really interested in buying it in the first place. Someone else is going to overhear that, and they're going to say, oh, it's not worth it, so I'm not going to buy it either. So it may actually cost the storekeeper a sale. The Rashbam says, no, just looking around usually involves picking up items to inspect them, causing their appearance and condition to deteriorate. Right? You go to a svarim store, start opening up all the svarim, flipping through the pages. So now the next guy that buys it isn't going to have that crack, right? When he opens it, so it's not going to be the same. It's going to be a little bit of wear and tear. It would seem the most obvious reason, though, is that it gets the storekeeper's hopes up. That you're coming in, you're pretending you want to buy something, and that would be a violation not only of Anos Devarim, but of the Gnevas Das as well. That you're pretending you're interested in becoming his customer and you're not. I got a voice text a couple of days ago from Mori Rabbi, Rabbi Kamenetsky, and he said to me, one of the Rebbeim in Yeshiva, in DRS, quoted you as saying that you're allowed to buy something from Amazon that you have no plan on keeping at all, just to return it, to use it and then return it the next day. So he said, I just had to reach out because I'm not saying anything in halacha, but in hashkafa that seems very terribly wrong. Did you actually say that? So I responded, I did not say that. To the contrary, I would think it's hashkafically and halachically forbidden. Why is it halachically forbidden? When you buy something, you're giving the impression that you're interested in keeping it. And it's true, there's a generous return policy in case you want to return something, but it's gnevas das if you're not interested in keeping it and you're pretending that you are. It's probably a form of ona'as dvarim as well. So that is actually absolutely asur. Rabbi Kamenetsky then found a 10-minute halacha that I had given on the topic where in the first 1 minute of that 10-minute halacha, I made that exact point, that it is the worst form of gnevas das. It is a greater form of gnevas das than even cheating on a test is. So I was misquoted. Okay. Wasn't the first time, won't be the last time, that's okay. The fifth example, the Gemara Bava Metzia says, telling somebody to look to buy an item at a place where the item is not available for purchase is a form of anas dvarim. Meaning a guy says, oh, where can I find this? And you send him somewhere on a wild goose chase, but you're sending him somewhere that the item isn't really there. That's a form of anas dvarim. It's like playing a practical joke on the person. Because the Mishnah explains that this, what are you going to do? You're going to tell him, go into that store, ask for that item. He's going to go into the store, he's going to ask for the item. The storekeeper is going to be embarrassed that he doesn't have it. So that's not a nice thing to do. If you suggest a shidduch or a job that you know is not going to come to fruition, right? You say, oh, I have an idea for you, and you know that the girl that you're suggesting for this guy is way out of this guy's league. She's never going to say yes. Right? It's never going to happen, but you're just trying to make it look like you're interested in trying to help this person or a job that you know is never, ever going to happen. So that might be an example of anas dvarim. A sixth example of anas dvarim, the Medrash in Mechilta and Shmos Chaf Beis Chaf Aleph tells us that Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Shmuel were being taken out to be killed. And Rabbi Shimon lamented that he didn't understand why he was suffering such a terrible fate. And Rabbi Shmuel said, maybe somebody came to ask you a question and you made them wait while you took a drink or while you tied your shoe, and causing other people distress, no matter how small, might be cause for your suffering. So apparently, this is teaching us two things, that causing somebody to needlessly wait, even a short period of time, is considered to be onas dvarim. That, some doctors enjoy when their entire waiting room is full of people, because it makes it look like they're very much in demand. So they'll overbook, and everyone will go, wow, this is such a popular doctor. But if they would book the appointments properly, then people wouldn't have to wait for hours on end to see them. So it's not nice to make people wait. And second, even though the Gemara considers it inappropriate to suggest that a person is suffering due to specific averus that he had done, the issue doesn't seem to be in effect when the victim asks for help in determining, what they had done. Meaning over here, the person asked, what do you think I did? And okay, so then maybe it's open for suggestions. But making people wait needlessly is another example of anas dvarim. And then one final example. Later poskim suggest the Aruch HaShulchan, Chosh Mishpat, Reish Chav Ches Os Beis writes that you shouldn't draw attention to someone else's physical shortcomings or to the shortcomings of their family members. Like, let's say, if someone struggles with their weight, to start talking about diets and whatever is not nice. If someone, you're talking to me and you're like, oh, I have to go to my hairstylist today for my flowing locks, and you know that not all of us have hair, that's not a nice thing to do. If Rachman al son of someone is struggling and they don't have children, to just talk about your children constantly in front of a person who's is having difficulty conceiving children, and you don't always know when someone is struggling to conceive, so one has to be careful about that. The Rambam in the 14th parak of Hilchos Mechira Halacha Yudalid says asking somebody about a topic that they're ignorant about is a form of anas tavarim, right? Because it's going to embarrass them. You're asking them about something and they're going to have to say, "I don't know." Magna Mishnah says that the Rambam made that one up, meaning that doesn't come from anywhere in Chazal, but it's logical, meaning the Rambam's getting the picture from all these examples, saying things that make someone feel bad is onas tevarim. However, the Arsamech says there is a source for this Rambam. Even though it's true, you can make them up in your own mind now. You can make up many examples of things that are hurtful, but this one actually comes from a Gemara, because there's a Gemara in Babasa, Daf Pe'el Fam Beis, that tells us Rav Shimon Bar Yochum asked Rav Blazar about a halacha that he hadn't understood for years, and Rav Blazar took offense to the question because he thought he was trying to chap him. He thought he was trying to embarrass him. Rav Shachter told us he was once sitting next to that he was once sitting by Rav Moshe Feinstein at a wedding next to Rav Moshe Feinstein, and someone came over to Rav Moshe and asked him about an obscure passage in the Prima Gadim, and Rav Moshe right away answered because he knew Prima Gadim Bal Peh, but Rav Moshe got the impression that the person was trying to chap him. So Rav Moshe said, he thought he was going to chop me enough in a Prima Gadim? Like, what was he thinking? But the impression that he got was that someone was trying to chop him. So that's not a nice thing to do either. The moral of the story is be nice to people, especially people who require extra sensitivity, then you need to be super nice to such people. Okay.